As an added benefit to reoccurring donors, we are sending out DCO face masks to any monthly contributors for 3 months or more at the $5 plus level. Please send your size preference, either large or youth or small size, along with membership email and mailing address to info@dcontario.org. And you can check out what they look like in the show notes.
This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
Hello, this is Caitlin Plant, Program Manager at Distress and Crisis Ontario. And as I am recording this, it is Friday, September 10th, which is World Suicide Prevention Day. As we acknowledge the importance of World Suicide Prevention Day, we have chosen to share a portion of a webinar that we offered to our volunteer responders at the beginning of August. In this webinar, Valerie Brosseau, a good friend of DCO, shared her experiences as both a responder and a survivor of suicide attempts. Her words are honest, they are challenging at times, and they are very helpful for anyone who is trying to support someone who is dealing with suicidality in their life. If you are in need of support, please visit our website at www.dcontario.org to find our member center that is closest to you or to access our ONTX program by clicking chat now or by texting support to 258258 between the hours of 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. daily. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
Well, thank you everyone for being here. This is a topic that is very close to my heart. It is a topic that's really important to cover, to learn more about, to discuss more and bring to the forefront. But as Caitlin mentioned, I do have some personal connections to this topic as well. So I am pretty candid about what I've been through. I have been through 3 suicide attempts, and having survived the most recent one, I wouldn't say that it's sort of this epiphany that, you know, oh, now I want to live. I realize how beautiful life is and what it has to offer and that kind of thing. But it definitely was a bit of a wake-up call that I was in that dark place for so long, and I had tried so hard to not be here anymore, that if I was unsuccessful and I was still here, there must be a way to make some positive meaning out of it. And that's why a lot of the work that I do is educating and informing people on suicide awareness and how to address suicide with people who are feeling that way, who are in that dark place. So I can understand from both sides of it, both supporting someone and somebody who's been in that dark hole feeling like there's no other option. And the way that I always like to phrase it is that it is a choice. Suicide is absolutely a choice that we make, but in that moment, it doesn't feel like there's a choice. It feels like the only way out. And so it's really important to understand the desperation of somebody who's in that place and the absolute darkness that they're in. And the fact that the approach we have to take is going to be a little more gentle than just throwing positivity at them. So I wanted to start about talking about the word itself. It can really be our instinct to shy away from that word. People sort of hesitate to use the word. They don't say it openly. It can be kind of shocking and scary. But saying it out loud and candidly and openly, research has actually shown that if you're addressing someone who's feeling that way, using the word out loud is actually more likely to reduce the chances that they'll go through with an attempt. And that's really important to remember. So we need to remember to ask the question directly and to practice as well. It's going to sound a little bit silly, feel a little bit silly at first, and maybe a little bit overwhelming because of the sort of the weight that we put on that word. But practicing saying it out loud is really important so that when you are confronted with a caller who feels this way, you can ask them, are you thinking of suicide? Are you thinking of killing yourself? Is suicide something that's on your mind? So when you ask somebody that, and they are thinking of suicide, you may be the very first person who has given them the opportunity to discuss that out loud and to actually share that with someone. And they may not have had the chance to really get that weight off their chest before and really explain that they're in that place that is so dark that many people avoid talking about it, avoid asking them about it, or wanting to delve into a little bit deeper. So you're really giving them a release and an opportunity to be honest about what they're experiencing. And if somebody is not thinking of suicide, they will very rarely be offended. But being asked directly if they are having those thoughts, it makes a connection in that moment. It really opens the door to the darkest part of what they're feeling. And it's sort of a, from my experience, it's sort of a breath of release of, okay, now I'm allowed to talk about this. Somebody truly cares to ask me what's going on in that part of my mind that I hide away because I know it would scare the people closest to me. And I'm allowed to talk about this now. So it really is a moment of connection and a place where you're able to build that trust with the caller. And by asking that question, it shows that you're open to discussing it. And that's going to be huge in building their confidence to actually sharing with you what it is that they're experiencing. So when it comes to risk, which is kind of what would lead you to asking this question directly and out loud, assessing whether the person is at risk and kind of what place they're in, there are a number of things to look out for. So things like, I just can't do this anymore. I don't see a way out. I can't go on. I want to disappear. So statements like that really show a desire to not be in this world or in this life or in this process that they're living through right now. And then things like, if anything happens to me, take care of, you know, my plant, my dog, Jimmy, my brother, my children, my grandmother, whoever might be in their care at the moment, is a sign that they may plan on not being around anymore. So those are important things to listen for and cues that can help you get to the point where you're going to dig a little deeper and use the word suicide out loud directly and ask them if that's what they're thinking of. It's also, it can be important to remember that when people are making these statements, sometimes it's not that they don't want to live anymore. It's that they don't want to live life as it is. There is something in their life causing them distress, causing them pain, anguish, causing them to be in a place where it's not worth it anymore. And that's where there's a little glimmer of hope that sometimes that can change. And I'm not saying that every problem has a solution. For example, someone with a chronic illness, it's more about managing rather than erasing that problem, because there's, you know, often there's no cure for illnesses like that. So it depends on the circumstance, but very often it's about making a change so they can find that hope and sort of lighten their load a little bit in terms of what they're dealing with. And in that moment, when you ask them the question, that's the first step to lightening that load, is admitting that they're feeling that way. So being the first person to allow them to really express that is really crucial in that call. And even if the person, you know, is still feeling suicidal at the end of the call, but you've put in a safety plan, you know, they'll be safe for X amount of time, that's still a success because you've alleviated that weight a little bit and you've given them that moment of connection where maybe for the first time they've been able to discuss what it is that they're feeling. So when it comes to actually bringing it up with someone, these are some tips that are important to remember in terms of that, how that conversation is going to go. It's important to remain non-judgmental and to not react with shock, because that is what they fear from everyone else in their life. And that's why they've likely not mentioned it to anyone. That doesn't mean to not be responsive to it and, you know, oh, suicide, yeah, no big deal. It just means to not be taken aback and start making sort of those judgments in the way that we're responding to them, and to focus really on care and compassion, and that we're there because we're invested in their safety. So really explaining that we want them to not go through with an attempt because we're invested in their life, as opposed to it being wrong, is helps us stay away from judgment as well. And then what I was saying before about the positivity is the piece that I want to address next, which is to not assure them that they have so much to live for, that it gets better, that things can be okay, that we'll fix this. As I mentioned, only one example out of many of that is something like a chronic illness that causes physical pain and emotional challenges in someone's life. That's not something we can promise them will get better or we can make go away, but it's about meeting them in the place where they are emotionally and finding out what can help them stay safe, at least for the moment. And so they're going to be in a very dark place. And when it feels completely hopeless, it can be extremely invalidating to have somebody throw sunshine and rainbows at you. And that is something that I experienced, where being somebody who's very, I tend to be sort of acquiescent sometimes. And I've been in places where I was suicidal and people telling me that there's hope, that it gets better, I have so much to live for. I found myself tending to their feelings when they actually were making an attempt to support me. And I would say, right, of course you're right, because I knew that that would make them feel better. They would feel like they had supported me successfully. But on the inside, I still felt that deep darkness and that hopelessness. And I didn't have anyone meeting me there emotionally in that darkness to validate it and tell me that it's understandable that I feel that way. It's okay that I feel that way. And now what can we do to keep you safe for the next X amount of time? So it's very important to remember it's not about me being negative. It's just about being realistic of the place they're in at that moment and meeting them there and really validating. We need to validate before we can move to trying to bring something more positive into the conversation. So when it comes to the rest of that conversation, that's when we can get back to those open-ended questions and really truly explore the feelings that, excuse me, that brought them to this place. So finding out how they came to feel this way and what are the different things they're feeling, what are the stressors that are going on, what thoughts are going through their head, as opposed to trying to convince them not to do it. And that conversation should be led by the caller. It's going to be a little difficult at times. If you're feeling in such a dark place, it's hard to talk about it at times. But if they've called us, then they have a desire to open up, to connect with someone and to get some support. So the words will come out eventually. Use those silences and don't feel awkward about them. Sometimes silences are good. They let the caller take a minute to gather their thoughts and figure out what they want to say. So it will be a slower pace, lower tone, sort of lower energy conversation, because it's a difficult place to be and to start expressing those feelings that you've never had a chance to express to anyone else before. Once we've determined that they are feeling that way, we need to ask if they have a plan and ask if they have the means to carry that out. If there is a plan and there is the means to carry it out, then we obviously have to address that right away. We need to also explore what supports and resources they have in their life other than us, because obviously we can't be on the phone with them for the next 12 hours keeping them safe, but we want to ensure that there's other things that can help. You know, are you home alone? Can you go stay with someone else? Can someone else come stay over? How are we going to keep you safe? And if they feel they cannot stay safe, or if they cannot commit to you that they will stay safe and call back, they won't commit to a safety plan, then contacting emergency services is going to be our next step and what we have to do. And if they've already taken steps towards an attempt, then obviously that's emergency services right away. So you may get some pushback. Some people will not want emergency services called, but if you're fearing for their safety, that's absolutely your call. And that's something that you have to do. And again, if they're upset, but they're alive, to me, that is a good outcome to the scenario. So we need to remember that their safety is first. And if somebody can commit to you that they feel safe enough to drive themselves to the hospital, that can be an option aside from emergency services. But if they feel they can't stay safe, or they've already taken steps towards an attempt, then absolutely we have to call for them. If someone is not ready to get support, that can be very difficult. And that kind of relates to my last point, because somebody might say, no, don't send an ambulance, no. But then when you ask them, can you stay safe for the next 6 hours? They say, no, I can't. And that kind of puts you in a tough place. So no matter the reason, when someone is not open for support, there's a few things we can keep in mind. Of course, compassion and empathy are going to be huge, acknowledging how difficult and painful the feelings are that they're experiencing, really validating what they're going through is going to be the first step, because that builds that trust. It lets them know that they're being heard, that somebody is meeting them where they are and wants to truly understand what they're going through. So that's going to start building that rapport where maybe eventually they will be open to that help a little bit more. And we need to really express that we're invested in their safety. So our desire to get them help has to be based on the fact that we don't want them to suffer. We want them to feel better in any increment that they can. We want them to be safe and healthy. And focusing on that, again, will build more of that connection rather than, you know, it's wrong. What, how would your family feel? You're leaving your dog behind. All of these sort of statements that may feel to the caller like you're bringing up a little bit of guilt in terms of their suicidal thoughts. And we want to avoid that. If they're not ready for further support, we can also help them find resources. And that might make it easier for them to reach out for help if they know they have different options, either instead of EMS, if it hasn't gotten to that point, or after EMS has intervened, if they know sort of what the next steps are going to be for that longer term management of the situation, like therapy centers, counselors, group programs, anything that might help them on a road to recovery. I know for myself, so as I mentioned, I've had 3 attempts, and it was very difficult to find the right support and treatment for me. And part of it as well was that I maybe wasn't ready to take it all in, which is why the attempts were recurring. And it's a really difficult journey that is not linear, a lot of ups and downs, steps forwards and steps backwards. And that doesn't mean that your support didn't work. That doesn't mean that they're not trying. It's just a really difficult journey, especially if those suicidal thoughts are brought on by something, something more chronic, like a mental illness. That doesn't mean that it's any more or less serious, whether it's brought on by something like a really intense grief or an event in their life. It's just as serious. If it does come back because it's part of a mental illness, that can just be a little more complex. And it's difficult to commit to that treatment and to have it start sinking in and start going on that journey of learning to manage what you're going through. And so it's important to be really patient with these callers, because it is not something that we do for attention as a threat. It is very real, very painful. And it's something that, I mean, I know for myself, every time that I took myself to the ER and said, I'd like to see the crisis team, I'm feeling suicidal, there was no pride in that. I felt like a burden. I felt like I was taking up resources yet again. And I know logically that's not the case. I was a person in need of support. I went and sought support, and that's okay. But emotionally, it's easy to sort of add to the painful emotions you're already feeling by feeling that guilt and that shame for what you're going through as well. So that's why we need to remember that empathy for the caller, and to remember how difficult it is to be in that position. So when you're asking your open-ended questions and exploring why they're feeling that way, being very gentle about it, very compassionate, and really trying to connect with something in your life that has brought you to a point where you were extremely low. And not everybody has experienced suicidal thoughts. Not everybody will understand them, because it's not something that everyone goes through. And you don't have to understand what it feels like to want to end your life to be able to empathize with someone in that place. You can just connect with something within yourself that has been in a place where things were the darkest for you. And that will help you connect with what they're feeling. And so it's important to remember that in that moment, you probably also didn't want to be told, you know, it gets better, everything's okay, buck up, you'll be fine. So it's important to remember that it's a very difficult spot to be in. It's extremely painful, and it takes a lot of gentleness and compassion to slowly take the steps to come out of it. I want to go back to that point about saying it out loud. Talking about suicide can be very daunting. It's a word that we don't use lightly. We say it in hushed tones. We barely mention it. And we also speak about it in ways that maybe without meaning to are not helpful or appropriate. I know that we hear it in the media all the time, the phrase commit suicide. What do people commit? Crimes. We try to stay away from the word commit because it has a negative connotation, and suicide is a serious mental condition. It's not a crime. People will say things like, when reporting in the media is another place that's really important to manage the words that we use. And it's always a good idea to write into newspapers if you see language that's not appropriate, or correct friends and family when they use language that's stigmatizing around the subject of suicide, saying a successful attempt, just sort of, that's another example. It has a connotation that, or an unsuccessful attempt, it has a connotation that suicide was sort of a positive goal kind of thing. So the language that we use can be really important, and using it out loud intentionally in appropriate ways is going to help destigmatize suicide and help us talk about it more openly. And asking somebody out loud, are you thinking of suicide, can be very scary. We can be afraid that we're going to offend them, shock them, make them upset or anger them, but that could literally save a life. That person could have never mentioned it to anyone before, but asking them that directly will lead them to answering that question honestly. When I've been confronted with that question, I've been in that place, I usually just burst into tears and say, yes, that's what has happened in the past. I found myself incapable of lying. There's just too much emotion within me that being asked that question and seeing that somebody truly wants the answer, most likely because they want to offer support, was just overwhelming in terms of, I did feel suicidal, but a part of me was just crying out for help and for support. And having somebody ask me that question was the first step to that. And it just kind of opened the floodgates to me sharing everything I was going through, whereas I was keeping it all in from everyone in my life, fearing that I would shock them and scare them, that they would be worried about me, that I would be a burden. So that question is extremely important. And practicing saying it out loud might be something that you have to do to get to the point where it feels more natural to ask it of a caller. And again, like I said, if somebody is not thinking of suicide, they will very rarely be offended or upset. They will just correct you and let you know that that's not what they're thinking of. It's always difficult to see somebody hurting so badly that they don't want to be here anymore, but we can take a little bit of solace in the fact that we have training and we have information and knowledge that can help us support them as best as we can. And at the very least, keep them safe for whatever you can commit to, whether, you know, that's 6 hours, 12 hours, and then call us back, or make a safety plan where it'll be overnight and then you go to your mom's in the morning, whatever the case may be. That's where we really can make a difference. And it's like anything with a release valve. If you think of anything like a kettle, for example, if you have that release valve and you can release a little bit of pressure, that's exactly what we're doing emotionally for the callers. So it makes those suicidal thoughts less urgent and a little bit less having so much weight on them. So it's just a moment where they get to express what they're going through, let it out a little bit, and ask for what support they need in that moment. They'll know what their needs are best. The only time that you know best what their needs are is if EMS is needed, like I said, and you go into that more assertive role. But other than that, offering resources, seeing what they think would be appropriate, exploring options with them of what their supports are in their life, we still want to give them sort of leadership in their own support process and their own call. So the other point I wanted to talk about is taking care of ourselves, because suicide can be a very heavy topic. It can be difficult to deal with. And we very often see this pattern of people who, there are certain signs that they may be feeling suicidal, and then they have an attempt and unfortunately they pass away. And then many people in their life often blame themselves. I should have seen the signs. Why didn't I do anything? What could we have done? And that causes a lot of guilt and shame and very heavy feelings in the people who are suicide survivors. Suicide is very often preventable, and there are definitely signs that somebody's feeling that way, but we can't control anybody's actions and we can only offer them support. So as long as you're there offering compassionate support, there's never a time where you should be doubting yourself. I should have done more. What more could I have done? What did I miss? We do the best that we can. We are all doing this work because we are empathetic people who care and want to support. So suicide is a really difficult topic. It can be, like I said, hard to say out loud, hard to discuss. We need to practice saying it out loud. It's something, as I said, that's very important to me because I've lived it and I have a lot of experience in supporting people in that situation. And it's been really great to be able to share that knowledge and information.
Hi.
I'm Damien, one of the editors of the DCO Learning Forums podcast. We are committed to providing the most current and up-to-date information. With your help, we can make it better. Please consider going to tips.pinecast.com/jar/distress-and-crisis-ontario.com or by clicking the link in the show notes. And by donating, monthly contributors will be able to access a special podcast feed. In it, we'll have additional content and some more in-depth pieces on some of our most popular topics. Thank you.